And it's pretty clear that the gospel writers, more or less, some to more clearly than others, are anxious to put the blame on the Jews and not on the Romans. At least they give that impression. I don't believe they were innocent or indifferent in giving that impression. It's done in different ways, in different Gospels. When Pilate, the Roman, says to the Jews, "This man's innocent and I wash my hands of him, and if he's put to death, it's not my doing, but yours." The Jews voluntarily say, "All right, let his blood be on our head. We're willing." Pilate said, "If he's going to die, that's your lookout, not mine. See ye to it." And they say, "All right, his blood's on our head. We can take it." In the Gospel of John, Jesus says to Pilate, "It's not your fault. It's the people that turned me over to you that are to blame." Well, those are interesting observations, aren't they? I was speaking of this yesterday, and I said you never can tell whether the Christians, whether it's because the Christians loved Rome the more or the Jews the less. When two people share responsibility, your attitude towards those two people has a good deal to do with the way you put it. And I suspect that at the time the Gospels were written, the Christian consensus of opinion was that the death of Jesus, from the point of view of human responsibility, rested very heavily as a guilt upon the Jews. And not nearly as heavily as a guilt upon the Romans, although it was actually on a Roman cross, not a Jewish stoning, but on a Roman cross that Jesus died. Now, to be able to exempt your crucified leader from any guilt in the sight of Rome was a good deal of a tour de force, but a very welcome one in the time when it was very nice if you could escape any criticism from the Romans. The Romans were the authorities throughout the world. These Gospels were circulated not only in Palestine but well outside. Everywhere it was important for Christians, for their save their skins, to have it known that in the primary instance of the whatever it is, call it the Reichstag fire or something like that, at the first instance of early conflict, the Romans were not responsible for apparent persecution, crucifixion of your crowd. And if you follow one of these writers through the book of Acts, one of these evangelists, you will see that he has an attitude very much like that all the way through. Whitewashing the Romans and blaming heavily the Jews. Well, that's Christian thinking, not on a religious level, if you like, but on a political self-defensive level. I don't want to dwell on that because we're interested in other sides of it. Another important thing to defend Jesus was to present the view that it was no accident or impropriety on his part that led to death. On the contrary, he fully expected it, had accepted it as something destined to come, and had three or more times expressed his definite anticipation of it as in some of those times with a certain amount of detail. The Gospel of Mark has three predictions of his death, at least, and other incidental ones, but three quite similar to each other, coming one after another. In the Gospel of John, you got, in different language, the same sense of expecting death on Jesus' part. I hardly need to explain to you, do I, why an early Christian couldn't have Jesus taken by surprise with this. If it was to happen, Jesus ought to know about it. Some people think that Jesus was greatly afraid of being assassinated. He escaped that, and he had a more dramatic end. But I don't know anything about that. What the Gospels know is that he expected this end, anticipated it, and it didn't take him off guard. And they would rather have it so. It would be to his advantage if you could say that he had expected it. There's always a little extreme here. On the other hand, if he expected it, doesn't that take a lot of the blame out of the people that gave it, that did it? Or if he knew there was danger of it, why didn't he avoid it? There's no evidence that he couldn't have avoided it, but he kept on this same self-destructive way. He knew that Jerusalem would be the end. He said in one passage, not only would Jerusalem be the end, but I can't die outside of Jerusalem. There never was a prophet known that didn't die in Jerusalem. And therefore, as long as I'm out of Jerusalem, I'm sitting pretty. I go my way and work cures today and tomorrow outside of Jerusalem. That's out in Herod's kingdom. I'm not afraid of what will happen to me out here in Perea or wherever he was, Galilee. Nobody's going, no prophet's going to die outside Jerusalem. Not only he knew where it would be, but he knew it wouldn't happen until it was to happen. Kind of fatalistic view. And therefore, he could bide his time. The Gospel of John is particularly strong in this point of view, that when Jesus came, it was because his hour had come. And the clock had struck. The time had come for his death to occur. It was to occur, it was destined to occur, he knew it was to occur, but he wasn't going to be hurried or worried about it. He would, until his time had come. His disciples said to him in John, better look out, they're after you. He says, my time has not yet come. All this, of course, brings us to the early Christian point of view, that not only Jesus knew what he was about and when and where it would happen, but that God too knew all about it, expected it, permitted it, planned it. How shall I say, planned it or allowed it? A lot of people in dealing with problems of evil think you get a great deal of difference. If you say God planned it, it's bad. If you say he allowed it, it's not so bad. I don't find a very easy distinction there. At any rate, the early Christians didn't bother a little thing like that. They were quite prepared to say that God intended it. Now, does God intend anything without telling his prophets? I'm repeating a question from the book of Amos, am I not? Is there anything God intends to happen without telling his prophets? Well, if this was to happen, then you could be absolutely sure that God had the prophets predicted. So that the early Christian interest in this thing was partly in identifying its predictions in the Old Testament. Now, there are two ways of predicting a thing. One is to predict the mere event. And that would be the best if you could do that. If one of the prophets had said God would let the Messiah die, but it's very hard to find a prophecy in the Old Testament that says that. Therefore, the next best thing you can do is to say that God anticipated and let the prophets predict the circumstances of the death. And that's what the evangelists do. The evangelists quote the Old Testament with much more concentration in this immediate scene than they do anywhere else. Even Matthew, who quotes the prophets the most, the evangelists, and even John, who hardly ever quotes the Old Testament, they all converge on this scene to think of all the little things about this scene which agree with what the Old Testament says. And I won't repeat them all, but if you look them over, you'll find that one after another. Such little sayings as, they gave me gall to drink. They divided my clothes and cast lot for my clothing. He made his grave with the wicked or with the rich. Well, he did with rich Joseph of Arimathea. He is his grave that he... He was numbered with the transgressors. Yes, he was. There were two of them on crosses right by him. Not a bone of his should be broken. Yes, we're told that they broke the bones of the others, but they didn't break any of his bones. They broke their legs. Well, so it goes. The early Christians, therefore, were deeply concerned to show that the circumstances of the death of Jesus were in the planning of God. Now, I think they believed, pretty sure Paul believed, that the death itself, see, none of these things mention the death, do they, that I mentioned. They believed that the death itself, not merely the accompaniments, quite superficial accompaniments, were predicted. Paul says, I received, that is, the early church before me believed, he was died according to the scriptures. I've left out something temporarily. That he died according to the scriptures. And that he rose according to the scriptures. When we discussed the resurrection, I told you how hard it was to find the scriptures that said he would rise. In a way, it's just as hard to find those that said he would die. However, more recent Christians have found a very convenient passage, the 53rd chapter of Isaiah. And while it's very little quoted in the early Christian writings, and strangely lacking from the modern point of view, if you look for something, this story of the servant of Jehovah who was smitten and disfigured and wounded and so on, and he made his grave with the wicked. He must have died. This figure, hard to identify in the 53rd chapter of Isaiah, if you regard it as a prediction of the coming Messiah, meets the bill of having one prophet, at least, anticipate the dying of the Messiah. And that's it's used by Christians that follow this same procedure up to the hilt.